BakerBots, LLP, provides podcasts for educational purposes only. They are not legal advice and are not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship. This communication may constitute attorney advertising.
Welcome to the Lawful Influence podcast, where we pull back the curtain on legal issues in the world of campaign finance and lobbying. I'm your host, Sterling Marchand, coming to you from Washington, D.C. In this episode, we're going to cover solicitations for political action committees. Solicitations are key to a successful PAC because that's how the PAC generates money that it can then in turn spend on candidates and elections. So if your PAC wants to spend more to influence elections, it all starts with successful solicitations. Now, given that individual contributors are limited in how much they can give a PAC in any given year, PACs can really only bring in more money by increasing the number of people they solicit contributions from, and then maximizing the participation of those people. The first part, increasing the number of people you solicit, seems straightforward. But as with all things campaign finance, solicitations are subject to a number of restrictions by the FEC. And the broader the audience, the more restricted you are. Today, I'll provide you with the five key elements for making effective and legal PAC solicitations, or basically five areas to keep in mind when asking for money to help ensure that you maximize your audience and participation, but don't run afoul of the FEC rules. We'll start out by discussing potential audiences and then work our way backwards through methods, limits, language, and we'll wrap up with my favorite, the fifth element. What is the fifth element? You'll have to listen to find out. Before we dive into a lawful solicitation, I want to preface this by saying that these rules differ based on the type of PAC you have, and there are a few types of PACs that we are going to be regularly discussing. The first is a corporate-connected PAC, or the technical term is Separate Segregated Fund, or SSF. These are set up by companies or trade associations or labor unions. The SSF is distinguished, as the name implies, by the fact that the money that is contributed is held separately from the general corporate account. And that's because companies generally cannot use corporate funds to make contributions to federal candidates. But a company can lawfully use its funds for establishing, administering, and fundraising an SSF, which in turn can raise money to make contributions to federal candidates. The second type of PAC that we will regularly discuss is a non-connected PAC. Non-connected PACs are, as the name states, not connected to any one particular candidate or organization. Non-connected PACs may have a sponsoring organization, but the hallmark of a non-connected PAC is that they solicit anyone in the general public who can lawfully contribute. They are often used by partnerships or just some group of persons that seek to influence an election. The third type of PAC that we will discuss regularly are what are commonly called super PACs, but it's really a misnomer because super PACs are not legally a PAC. What we call super PACs are not subject to solicitation or spending limits like true PACs, provided they use their funds solely to independently campaign for or against candidates. For that reason, they are more properly referred to as independent expenditure committees, and they were created in the 2010 Citizens United Supreme Court decision, which we'll be discussing in more depth soon. There are obviously a lot of other PACs out there, including candidate PACs, party PACs, leadership PACs, but these are really applicable only to federal candidates, office holders, or political parties, and we'll not be discussing them. For today, we're going to focus on corporate PACs, or SSFs. So with that, let's get going on the five elements to legally maximize your solicitations. The first element of a PAC solicitation is to know your audience. Who are you going to be soliciting, or really, who can you solicit? Because obviously, the broader the audience, the more money your PAC is potentially going to be able to raise. But it's not just a numbers game, because the target audience is also going to dictate what comes next in terms of how the solicitation is delivered, how often it can be made, and what disclaimers or notices must be used. Each PAC must engage in a balancing of how many people it can reach versus the burdens that come with it. As an initial matter, a corporate PAC can never solicit the general public, but rather can only solicit certain people associated with the company. And there is a distinction within the company between what is called the restricted class and the expanded class. Or the expanded class is more often referred to as the twice-yearly solicitation group. So starting with the restricted class, this includes a company's shareholders and executive and administrative personnel. Executive and administrative personnel are employees who are paid on a salary as opposed to an hourly basis and who have policymaking, managerial, professional, or supervisory responsibilities. In practical terms, this includes managers, officers, and directors, but it may include others. This restricted class is also defined to include each of those employees' families. One tip to maximize your reach, a corporate PAC can generally solicit not just the restricted class of its own connected organization, but the restricted class of the parent, subsidiaries, and affiliates as well. The other class is what we call the expanded class, or the twice-yearly class, and that includes all employees of the connected organization. In other words, non-executive, non-administrative personnel. That might include your labor organization, hourly employees. And again, it also includes their families. This expanded class can only be solicited twice a year, and as we'll discuss, is subject to a number of additional restrictions. Now, there are a few general exceptions to these different classes, and one that's really important to remember, especially for companies in today's world, is that a PAC can never solicit a foreign national, and that's anyone who is not a citizen of the United States or not a green card holder. And while it's not always easy to tell if someone is a foreign citizen, you cannot knowingly solicit a foreign national. And so a best practice is to have in place some process to screen foreign nationals from receiving your solicitation materials and to regularly check that that process is working. I'll note briefly that for trade organizations, labor unions, and membership organizations, the restricted class may be defined slightly differently. So that's the first element, know your audience. Once you know who you can solicit, you need to consider your solicitation methods, and that's the second element. It may seem intuitive that if you want to get the most out of your solicitations and bring in the highest number of contributions, you should just solicit your expanded class. But the methods matter because once you understand how burdensome and restrictive some of the methods are, it may dictate which audience you want to target. So the expanded class or the twice-yearly class can only be solicited in writing. This means that it has to be mailed to the person's residence. And that's it for the expanded class. No other methods can be used. That requires an additional amount of work that the PAC must undertake in order to be able to solicit a much broader class of people. But for the restricted class, there are numerous methods available. You can make email solicitations using a listserv that is just the restricted class. You can also make online solicitations through websites or intranet pages, so long as the page is only accessible via a password. The restricted class can also be solicited via publications, such as articles and company newsletters or other mailings. But if you're doing that, you have to ensure that no more than a de minimis number be received by folks outside the restricted class. So again, you can't just put a solicitation into a publication and blast it out to everyone in the company. Finally, the restricted class can be solicited to orally through a speech at a convention, a meeting, or a telephone call. Again, that is provided that only the restricted class is present for the solicitation and that the necessary notices are included in the remarks. In some ways, they can be awkward to include a disclaimer when orally giving a presentation, But this method can be very effective if, for example, your company is holding a shareholders meeting and you have all of your restricted class in one place. The third element of a successful and legal solicitation is to know your limits. Now, as we've discussed, there are limits on how much an individual can contribute and what a PAC can accept from contributors. But before that even comes into consideration, there are certain limits on what corporate PACs can even ask for in a solicitation, and that's what we're discussing here. First and foremost, contributions to the corporate PAC must be voluntary, and to ensure that it is voluntary, the solicitation must never use force or threats, including job discrimination or financial reprisal. That also extends to dues or fees that are mandatory for employment. A PAC cannot use mandatory fees as a contribution to the PAC because that is not voluntary. A PAC can also not reimburse employees for making contributions to the corporate PAC through a bonus or through any other means. So companies need to watch out that their solicitation materials do not create an appearance that salaries or bonuses are tied to an expectation that the money will be contributed to their own PAC or even to other candidates. Now, a PAC can, subject to specific rules, match contributions with gifts to charity or use fundraising events or other promotions to raise money for an SSF. These can be an effective and lawful way to incentivize contributions. But again, there are specific rules applying to those types of solicitation events that the PAC should understand and must comply with. For soliciting the expanded class, it requires a separate process for collecting contributions through what is called a custodian. And the purpose of the custodian is to ensure anonymity for those who do not want to contribute. That custodial process has to be in place before the solicitation goes out. And the custodian may not be an employee of the company or the PAC, with the exception of the PAC treasurer. But more commonly, a PAC will use a third-party vendor or a bank to act as custodian, and the custodian has specific duties regarding collecting contributions and forwarding information to the PAC. One additional consideration for soliciting the expanded class is that the company must reasonably notify its labor organization, if any, of the company's intent to make that twice-yearly solicitation. And it must make available to its labor organization the method the company uses for soliciting and collecting contributions. So this is an additional limit on soliciting to the twice yearly expanded class if your company has a labor organization. The fourth element of a lawful PAC solicitation is language, and more specifically, a reminder to watch your language. All solicitations require certain notices with specific language depending on the audience. Now, certain disclaimers must be included in every solicitation, such as the statement of the PAC's political purpose and a statement that the recipient has the right to refuse to contribute without reprisal. That goes back to the requirement that a donation must be voluntary. But note that simply using the word voluntary isn't enough under the FEC rules. It must state that the solicitee has the right to refuse to contribute. If your solicitation is going to suggest an amount, which is very common, there must be notice language included that the suggested amount is not enforceable and that more or less may be given. In other words, the solicitation cannot specify a minimum amount to contribute. Only guidelines. The solicitation also has to make clear that the amount given will not benefit or disadvantage the person contributing. Now, in addition to the FEC notices, there may be certain IRS notices that are required that inform the solicitees that their donations are not tax deductible. Finally, all solicitations have to include what is referred to as best efforts language. And that is a request in the solicitation for the contributor's name, address, occupation, and employer, and a statement that the PAC is required by law to use best efforts to obtain that information and report it. Now, this may seem trivial when a corporate PAC is soliciting its own employees and has ready access to that information, but the FEC routinely opens inquiries into a PAC's best efforts when this information is missing from its public reports. And so it's really important that you have covered your bases by including that language in the solicitation and conducting follow-up as necessary. If your solicitation is going beyond the restricted class, then additional notices and disclaimers will apply. And while I don't have time to go into all of the specific language required today, feel free to reach out to me if you want additional information. Finally, that brings us to the fifth element of a successful solicitation, and that is, drumroll please, don't solicit in the first place. Okay, maybe that's a bit of a stretch, but the fifth element is basically understand your alternatives. And what I mean by that is, there's obviously a lot of rules and restrictions when a communication is a solicitation, but what if we talk about our PAC and it's not a solicitation? Then none of those rules apply. So is there a way for a company to communicate about the PAC without it being a solicitation? Yes. And knowing the line between solicitation and not a solicitation is that critical fifth element. So what is a solicitation? Obviously, a straightforward request to give money to a PAC is a solicitation. But the FEC has also found that any publication of the PAC's right to accept contributions is a solicitation. In fact, the FEC has basically said that any wording that encourages support for the PAC is a solicitation. So that would include statements like, everyone should support our PAC by contributing, as well as statements like, supporting our PAC is critical to our industry. Both of those statements would constitute a solicitation, and all of the restrictions that we've just talked about would kick in. The flip side is that a communication that does not encourage support for the PAC or facilitate making contributions are not solicitations. And so this actually gives you a fair amount of room to talk about the PAC to a broader audience without it constituting a solicitation. For example, a PAC can provide straightforward facts about the existence of the PAC, when it was created, why the PAC was created, how much money it's raised in different years, how many candidates it supported, which candidates it has supported, and how the money was otherwise spent. And because none of that is a solicitation, it's not limited to the restricted class, it does not require notices or other disclaimers. And most companies want to provide information on the PAC to a broader audience without it being a formal solicitation. And that is the way to do that. But the truth is obviously in the details. And so how you write a non-solicitation is heavily dependent on the particulars of your PAC and the communication itself. So that's the five elements of a lawful, successful PAC solicitation. Know your audience, know your methods, know your limits, watch your language, and know your alternatives. That's all for today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have any follow-up questions or you want to know more, my contact information is in the episode notes. Until next time, I'm Sterling Marchand.
Thank you for listening to this BakerBots podcast. BakerBots has the experience, knowledge, and people to solve our clients' most significant legal issues. For more information on BakerBots practices, please visit us at bakerbots.com. This presentation is provided by BakerBots LLP for educational and informational purposes only. It is not legal advice and is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship. Under the rules of certain jurisdictions, this communication may constitute attorney advertising.